fighting for America.
The notion that the West is at war with Islam is an ugly lie. And all of us, regardless of our faith, have a responsibility to reject it.
Fighting for Idaho.
They're calling us what we are, Christians. And one by one, we form the strongest bond because it's a bond that is rooted in Jesus Christ. And no matter how much they try to oppose him, they will not prevail.
Fighting for you.
If you mothball some of these assets, you know, it doesn't take long for things to start to deteriorate. That's why we insist that they put another mission in here before they pull the A-10 out.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO. Idaho's first radio station.
And good morning, Kevin Miller in the Morning. We're joined by Ada County Sheriff Gary Rainey with us. Sheriff Rainey, good to have you with us.
Thank you. Good morning. Great to be here.
Now, let's talk a little at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Some issues that are certainly of interest to you and to your staff, but they don't get a lot of run. They should. And that's the mental health crisis in law enforcement. It's an issue that you and I talk about quite a bit. And a lot of people aren't aware of just how many people need help, but there aren't a lot of facilities that that do that anymore in the state.
No, we've really lost a lot of resources. If we go back several years, then there were more community resources, there were more government resources. But with the recession, a lot of those dried up. And so what happened, law enforcement becomes the frontline mental health intervention point. And that's not where we want to be. It's not where we should be. Because by the time we go there, it's usually in a real crisis and often become violent. The facilities, again, maintain that the Ada County Jail is probably the largest mental health facility in the Ada County, maybe in the state of Idaho. I know there's a hospital east, but we have about 70 to 80 chronically mentally ill at any given time, with many, many more who are episodically mentally ill. And some of them are so difficult to deal with and really should not be in jail.
Well, and that's the challenge, because in law enforcement, you know, you're either innocent or guilty, and then you have the mental health situation, which does that make it like many shades of gray, or does that disorient the picture, if you will, out of focus because of mental health concerns?
Well, there's a great example that is just still going on, and I'll try to make this brief, but a man was arrested in South Central Idaho and put in a jail over there. Clearly mentally ill, had a lot of difficulty communicating. He wasn't violent. He wasn't a danger, but he stayed in jail for a few days, and we have in the process, in order to stand trial, a need to prove competency. So there's what's called a competency hearing. So that competency hearing was ordered, but before it ever happened, the charges were dropped, and I think probably the officials over there just said, this isn't worth pursuing. So they let him out of jail. He goes to another county. He gets arrested. He stays for a few days, and the charges are dropped, and he gets out. He goes to another county, gets arrested, stays in jail a few days, and the charges get dropped. He's then brought to Ada County because we have a warrant out for him. So this warrant originated for an open container charge. It was $150 for failure to appear when he didn't show up on the open container charge. He stayed in the Ada County jail for 17 days because he couldn't go through the court process. Now, if it was you or I, right, and we had that charge, we get credit for time served in a day and be out. So he's not only in the wrong place, but we struggle to give him the care that he really needs. He was released again after that and has been back in custody one more time. Luckily now, we're going through that competency process, not to prosecute him for the crime, but to really help bring a solution to this. But this iteration over and over and in and out of jails, he's not violent. He's not a danger to the community. But he's a little bit of a danger to himself. In one of the arrests, he was sleeping in a gravel pit in the middle of winter in a sleeping bag. They had good concern for him. Arresting him for trespassing was protecting him, really. But we shouldn't be the ones who are dealing with this. The cost to the citizens of dealing with jail time, the lack of resources. It's a perfect example of, if we just had a little bit of community intervention, a little bit of help, people like him, and there are many more stories, wouldn't be where they're at.
What don't we understand about law enforcement officers?
You know, I think when it comes to mental health, and if we even go back to the Ferguson incident, and of course that was handled terribly by the officials there, but the thing that it's hard, I think, for people to understand is that we never know what we're getting into. When we walk up to you, you are a stranger, and you might be the greatest person in the world. You might be a law enforcement supporter.
Sure.
Or you might be going to try to kill us in one half second. There was a recent video that came out in law enforcement circles about an officer that was talking to a theft suspect. and everything was fine. He's talking out back of the house. The theft suspect's got his hand in his pocket. It's the middle of winter. I mean, no reason to feel threatened. And all of a sudden, for really no reason, the person pulls a gun out of their pocket and shoots the officer in the head and kills him. And it's that sort of wariness that we have to deal with on so many fronts. I think law enforcement around here does a good job of being compassionate, trying to do the right thing, trying to prevent violence. Sadly, we always have to be prepared for that instantaneous change to where somebody's trying to take our life or the life of somebody else.
What can we do, listening here at 580KIDO, to make the good guys know, let them know that we're one of the good guys? So, you know, it's been a while since I've been pulled over. But, you know, I'm always the hands up and all this. That's probably sending another message. But I want to make sure that everybody knows, you know, I'm not threatening. You know, I don't have my hands covered or anything. But, I mean,
yeah. Little things like that are good. I mean, we're not paranoid about it. We want
not
to
that I'm paranoid when I have my hands over my head or anything.
Well, we're not going to react that much. Right. But it does help to let us know. You know, to talk to us. And right. If, you know, if you're carrying a concealed weapon, just let us know you're carrying a concealed weapon. We don't care. But it helps. The difference between letting us know or suddenly your shirt slides back or your coat slides back and we see it and don't know your intent, you know, letting us see your hands. We always look for the hands. That's an important thing. You know, it'll never change. We're sadly in what's inherently a bit of a violent business. I mean, that's why we're here. That's why we carry guns and tasers and pepper spray and all of those other things is we're that front line of defense, sometimes by the use of force with the community. And that's the place we're in. But the nice thing that's going on now in law enforcement is the real awareness of, again, how do we make sure that we never have something like a Ferguson here? And I really don't think we would, but we can't just take that for granted. How do we keep reaching out into the community? How do we educate people? How do we keep that communication flowing? The transparency of what we do. One of the things that I'm sort of dealing with on a little tangent right now is all of the deputies now have on-body video. So if they're investigating something or they're going to a traffic stop, that's being video recorded. And we wanted that both to collect accurate evidence so it's not a he said, she said. You can see right there what happened. Also for transparency. I want everybody to know what the actions of Ada County deputies are because I'm confident if you know what those are, you're going to know that we did the right thing. At the same time, those on-body videos capture a lot of innocent people. And in our public record laws, anybody can get that. So we have to be really careful of going into people's houses. The way that we talk to them, the conversations become a little bit different.
Let's go to the phones. We go to Tea Party Bob for Sheriff Rainey at 580KIDO.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Sheriff Rainey, I've always had a tremendous amount of respect for the law enforcement officers. They have one of the most difficult jobs that you can imagine. But this morning, I wouldn't want to talk exactly about them, and maybe you can help me out with my mental health problem, which is the answer to a question. And that is, why is it that Idaho has not been able to get constitutional carry in our state? And why is it that you, as a duly elected officer sworn to uphold the Constitution, are not supporting our constitutional right to bear arms under the Second Amendment and allow us to carry firearms open and concealed without a permit?
Well, that's a twofold question.
Yes, it is.
One is, why do we not have constitutional carry? The answer is pretty simple. The legislature hasn't passed that. So there's a bill in the legislature now to consider that. I think there's two bills running, one from the NRA, one from a Constitutional Carry Association. You know, the legislature makes that decision. We enforce the laws. We don't determine the laws.
Do you support that?
When you say my not upholding the constitutional rights, you're absolutely wrong. I don't know where that comes from. But
I didn't say you didn't uphold them. I'm asking why you're not supporting this particular issue. Since you are a sworn officer who is supposed to uphold our constitutional rights.
Well, I guess what is your take on the constitutional carry legislation?
You know, my take all along has been that the rights of law-abiding citizens to carry concealed weapons, I don't have any problem with that at all. I don't want unintended consequences that allow gang members or domestic violence offenders or people like that to be able to carry weapons and victimize others. Law enforcement certainly has a little concern, too, about, just as I talked about, walking up on the car. But that's really secondary to let's not, in the process of giving law-abiding citizens the right to carry guns, unintentionally give criminals the right to carry guns and carry out crimes. And all we try to do is find that balance.
Okay. I appreciate the answer. But, again, we have five states who have been had experience with this. That has not been the case where we have had a lot of problems.
Tea Party Bob, we appreciate the call. Thank you. That is a point of concern. What it, and you know, you have a former Chief Masterson who's been involved in these public hearings. You continue on to do your job in a non-political way. But back to the gun rights movement in Idaho. From a law enforcement perspective, what is y'all's take, if you will?
You know, it's just like the citizenry. It's very split. Typically, when you get to the more urban agencies of police departments or sheriff's offices, we see the more organized crime, the drug crimes going on, the gang crimes. So you find greater concern. And I wouldn't say it's opposition to law-abiding people carrying guns. We have greater concern about unintentionally giving criminals the right to carry guns. And I think that's really where it falls, is typically the rural counties, just like in rural Idaho, whether it's a citizen, a sheriff, or chief of police, probably more supportive of that open carry because they don't have some of those larger city issues. Generally speaking, across the board, I would say the chiefs and the sheriffs are in favor of Second Amendment rights of people carrying guns. I am. I don't have any problem with that. But again, my issue is I want to make sure that we don't give criminals an easier access to carry out their crime.
How prevalent is organized crime here in Idaho, in Ada County?
You know, the nice thing is we have several different aspects of organized crime. It has kind of gone behind the scenes, and that's good in ways. If you remember drive-by shootings over in Nampa a few years ago, there were many, many of them. Thanks to the Metro Violent Crime Task Force that several of the agencies participate in, we've really driven that down to behind the scenes. What that means is streets are safer for the law-abiding citizens. We do have a lot of drug organized crime that happens. This is a major highway connection for drug pipelines that are coming up from Mexico and California. And you have Highway 95, you have I-84 that lead to other states. So that's natural, and it's become a little bit more sophisticated. And then we have different threads of whether it be from property crimes or, like chop shops. And,
sure.
Those come and go. All in all, Idaho's still a great state. I mean, we don't have the equivalent organized crime of big cities like Seattle or Portland or San Francisco or even Reno. But it's here. It is everywhere to a degree.
Can you talk a little bit about the cooperation between you, your colleagues in Canyon County, the feds, the state police? Because that's really where the tide started to turn when people, again, came together from the law enforcement aspect and community and said, look, let's share our resources. And, you know, let's stop the organized crime, the guns and the drugs and everything else that, you know, you had the drive-by shooting. So that's gone away, thankfully, and hopefully it'll stay away.
You know, I'm so proud of what happens here because it doesn't happen everywhere. Relations, which have not always been good, and sadly government's so driven by personalities sometimes, yeah. But relations here are really good. Every month, the chiefs of police and I get together here in Ada County along with the colonel of the Idaho State Police. That was yesterday morning, and, you know, a lot of it's just making sure we're solving problems, but a lot of it's making sure that if a problem starts to arise, we can pick up the phone and call somebody else. So we join more and more in task forces and in working together. The Metro Violent Crime Task Force is a great example. None of us have the resources to really go after those big organized crimes, and those are often indictments of 15 to 25 people, and that's just the indictments out of a gang. So we can't do that on ourselves, but by everybody coming together, and there's members from most all of the local agencies who come together along with some of the resources of the federal government to put those serious people. And the nice thing is when the feds are involved, the good thing is it's federal prison. So they're not going to prison in Idaho. They're not maintaining their network. They're going to federal prison in another state. And we've really seen that as a very effective tactic to disrupt the crimes. But it's good when something happens. Whether it's a serious incident, a lot of times the chiefs and I will be on our phones to each other saying, hey, what do you need? Do you need more resources? The other night when there was an officer involved shooting in Boise City and the Boise police officers were drawn to help that because a man was shooting out his front window at the neighbors, then ultimately was shot by a police officer. My deputies moved in along with Garden City and Meridian and just started taking those other calls for him. You know, that's the way it should be. It should be transparent. And we've had many conversations amongst the chiefs of should we even really have separate law enforcement agencies. Fire and EMS services right now are slowly moving toward almost being one agency and responding agnostic of what the patch says. That's the way it should be.
Let's go to the phones. We go to Pro Life for Sheriff Rainey at 580 KIDO. Hello, Pro Life.
Yes, Sheriff Randy said that we want to keep guns away from criminals. That is a big fallacy because there's no way you can keep guns away from criminals. If a criminal wants to get a gun, any person wants to really get a gun, they will get a gun regardless. And so I think...
I agree, but I didn't say keep guns away. I don't think I did. I didn't mean to. Okay. The unintended consequences of letting them lawfully carry a gun to carry out a crime.
Well,
I think his point being, and it's something that we haven't brought up, pro-life, and let me just jump in here, is the idea that you have bad people that all of a sudden they have the same rights but not the same intent that we do. And you say, hey, buddy, you know, why are you carrying that gun? And he might be bullying somebody. He might be using that gun for bad things, and you can't stop him.
Right. There's no reason why a person that's not had any prior gun violations should ever be restricted from And I believe that...
that's an interesting point. It only takes one, but go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Well, I believe that only juries should be able to take gun rights away from people. Just say someone's an embezzler. That doesn't mean that he and his family, forever almost, loses their gun rights. But we're not doing that. We're just saying if you're a felon, you don't have rights to a firearm, and your family doesn't.
To clarify, that's actually not true. There's only certain crimes where people lose their right to possess weapons, and that is after conviction. One of the things that we deal with, as you say it, so when somebody has been arrested for domestic violence strangulation against their spouse and come to the jail, you would want them to be able to keep a gun?
No, of course not.
But they're not convicted yet.
Well, that might be a temporary thing, but we're not having juries determine that. We're just letting judges, and they're real broad. They just say, listen, if you're a felon, you don't get a gun. That's generally. No, I'm not saying particularly, but we're restricting gun rights big time, and it's not right.
All right, pro-life, thank you very much. Sheriff Rennie, your thoughts on pro-life statement, we're restricting gun rights.
Well, it's actually not accurate. You can, by certain criminal offenses, lose your right to own a weapon. And if you're on parole, you can lose your right to possess a weapon. But that's actually pretty rare. The parole's not, but the actual loss of the right is pretty rare circumstance. People have that misunderstanding because they hear felon in possession of a firearm. Those felonies that are enumerated are actually just very few.
More coming up with Sheriff Rennie. We do want to talk about the Ada County Jail. We do want to talk again about public safety and other issues. Fighting crime here at 580-KIDO, 823.
Kevin. D&B Garden Show with Debbie Cook, Saturday mornings at 10 on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Sheriff Rennie with us, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580-KIDO. Sheriff Rennie, before we get rolling back talking about law enforcement and taking more phone calls at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. You're always involved with the United Way here in the Treasure Valley. I know that's very close to your heart and the good works that are being done. You know, the ounce of prevention versus the pound of cure.
Absolutely. You know, the great thing is when we talk about cooperation and law enforcement, one of the things the United Way is really taking the lead on, along with others, you know, YMCA and such, is bringing everybody together to solutions. We should try to put the Ada County Jail out of business. And that'll never happen. But if we had some front-end solutions, really education, and there's some great things going on, the Treasure Valley Education Partnership and others that are, I think, really are going to make a difference and model the way that we can change kids' lives when they're particularly disadvantaged. The financial stability aspect, you know, when people can't make ends meet, they've got to do something. I think there's a lot of good things going on. The banking industry is coming forward to help people learn how to manage their money a little bit better, how to save. It's just sort of exciting, that social aspect of making our community better, because over the years I've seen many, many things that sound really good and don't make a bit of difference at the end of the day. I think the neat thing now, because all of the different organizations are really coming together and not worrying about branding and getting credit and all of that, that we're really going to make a difference and make change.
Indeed, I always love that organization. Other issues in Ada County involve upgrades.
We've got really kind of four major software systems, if you think about it. So the dispatch system, and then dispatch sends the information out to the all of the police cars and ambulances and fire trucks in Ada County. And then if somebody gets arrested, it all goes to the jail. So about 18,000 people a year get arrested and go into the Ada County jail. So there's all those records. And then it all goes into a central system. And so we're upgrading all of those software systems at the same time. And it scares the heck out of me because we've all been through software upgrades. Said I've got deputies who drive 100 miles an hour and point guns at people, but what scares me is a software upgrade.
You don't want to lose any of those files. That's for
no,
sure.
No, that's it. And especially you think about the dispatch system. The one we've got really is still the basic system we put in place in 1994.
Wow.
It's rock solid, but it's not really up to today's standard. And so, you know, we're just trying to manage it very, very well. I think we've got a great team on board. All of the agencies, again, it's exciting that I think all of the law enforcement agencies are going to end up having one software system to share information, share data, reduce costs, rather than having one for Ada County, one for Boise City, one for Meridian, one for Garden City.
Well, and you remember that story on Channel 7, I think it was last year, where they talked about texting and the idea of, and you know the young people today, heck, even us, we're texting all the time and possibly texting a 911 call.
Yeah, that's been on our radar for a long time because we know that, exactly as you say, young people don't pick up the phone very often anymore. So the technology is almost there. Again, just like the software system, we want to make sure that it works. Once you pull the trigger on that, there can't be any failure. So it is very much on our radar. We look forward to that day. We're ready for that day. Part of it is our old communication center that sits on Barrister. Struggles to keep up with the technology, the infrastructure of the building. So we're building a new communication center. We'll be able to accept that sort of technology in either place, but it's going to be a lot better in the new center. I mean, think about if you had to run a radio show out of a house that was built in 1910. You know, it just wouldn't work as well as a modern house that was wired for IP and all of that. And so that's kind of the same thing, but we're very excited. We want to make that connection when we think going back to mental health and what do we do about the crisis. You know, it's making a connection with our community. It's making them feel comfortable that it's easy to reach out to law enforcement and say, hey, I think this doesn't look right. And if texting helps make that happen, we're all going to be better off.
More coming up with Sheriff Rainey next, 580 KIDO.
Treasure Valley's exclusive home for Kevin Miller. KIDOAM.com. 580 KIDO. Idaho's place to talk.
580 KIDO. Sheriff Rainey with us as we continue on. We go to Clyde in Mountain Home for Sheriff Rainey. Good morning, Clyde.
Good morning. I just wanted to clarify something the sheriff said earlier about the gun rights thing. And forgive me, I'm paraphrasing, but he said something akin to, you know, giving gun rights to law-abiding citizens can, you know, also give rights to, you know, criminals out there. But I just want to clarify that, you know, the government doesn't give rights to citizens. We already have those rights. And the government is there to protect those. So I think that's what's troubling the Tea Party Bob and pro-life and others like this, is this attitude of giving rights. They already have the rights, and so it's about protecting those rights. And the system that we have is supposed to protect those rights until someone abuses those and is convicted and goes through due process to lose those rights. Hello?
Okay, go ahead, Sheriff Rainey.
So you clarified your thought. Not exactly what I said, but I didn't know if there was a question in there.
Well, I'm just, I think it came across as this attitude that, you know, a lot of officials have is that, you know, the government bestows rights, and I think that's what's troubling when we hear you say something akin to that. And I don't have your exact statement, but you mentioned about the unintended consequences of giving rights to law-abiding citizens, but you know, that's not what the Declaration of Independence is. Our rights, we already all have those rights. They come from God, and the constitutions of the federal government and our states are there to limit government so they don't trample those rights. I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay. Thank you, Clyde, for the call. Sheriff Rainey, your thoughts?
Well, I think it's a big leap. What I was saying, and I think I came across clearly, was that what we don't want to do is put guns in criminals' hands for them to carry out crimes. To extrapolate that to Constitution and God's a bit of a leap for me, but That's what I meant to say, though. What my message was let's make sure that while law-abiding citizens have the rights to carry guns, that we don't give criminals the right or the opportunity, a necessary opportunity, to go victimize somebody.
All right. You ready to cross-train in journalism?
Sure.
All right. Joining us now, Senator Crapo. Senator Crapo, you're with Kevin Miller and Sheriff Rainey. How are you?
I'm well. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Senator.
Morning.
Now, Sheriff Rainey, would you like to start or would you like me to start for Senator Crapo?
Go ahead.
Okay.
I'm still the novice. I'm the tutor. You're the tutor here.
Now, that's scary. Yes, I'm giving direction. Okay. Senator, yesterday, very emotional news conference concerning the future of Gowan Field. Your thoughts on where we go from here, obviously the A-10, you, Senator Risch, Senator McCain, fighting to keep that program alive. How big is it that that we keep that thing going and we keep Gowan Field active?
Well, I think it's very critical. It's critical not only for Gowan Field and the Idaho Air National Guard, but it's critical for our country and our national security. The Air Force acknowledges that their decision to retire the A-10 early, meaning 3 or 4 years ahead of when it would have been retired and replaced by an F-35 wing, is purely budget-driven. And they acknowledge that the A-10 is one of the best airplanes we've got in the fleet for close air support. So this is a question of whether the Air Force has made the right call in choosing to retire the A-10 as it deals with its budget restrictions. And many of us, as you indicated, our entire Idaho delegation, as well as a number of strong allies in the Senate, Kelly Ayotte and John McCain and others, strongly disagree with that. The bottom line here is that we must strengthen and protect our national defense posture, especially at these dangerous times in the world. And to be retiring the A-10 early is not the wisest decision.
Sheriff Rainey, do you have a question for the senator?
Yeah, I just want to thank you for the efforts of keeping the A-10s here, and if not the A-10s, then another plane. We'll hope for Gowan Field to be out there. So what strikes me, I know you were at the Lincoln Day celebration last night, Senator. It was an interesting commentary.
Now, you were there, too?
I was.
Hey, just transparency, full disclosure. That's all
yeah,
I'm saying.
I was. That was an interesting commentary on just looking forward quickly to the presidential election and the success of Democrats and Republicans, and will Hillary Clinton win? And I was wondering if you had any follow-up comment on what you thought about that.
Yeah, you know, last night, for those that weren't at that banquet, we had two national experts on political dynamics, particularly the presidential races and other dynamics in the country between the Republicans and Democrats as the continuous battle to control Congress goes forward. And they talked about their view as to the respective strengths and weaknesses of both parties in the presidential election. And I found it very fascinating. My takeaway from it was that both sides have some strengths right now, but both sides have some weaknesses. The Democrats have got to get past the fact that the vast majority of the country really thinks that the president's been leading us in the wrong direction, and they really don't like the policies of the Democratic Party right now. That's one of the reasons we saw such a strong rebound in the Senate for the Republicans in the last election. What the Republicans have to face is not that the public doesn't like their policies and their positions, but that they haven't yet aggressively put those forwards and shown the American public what they can and will do if allowed to govern. And so I think that it was some very interesting commentary by those who were discussing it. And by the way, I agreed with them. I think that the Republicans have a strong agenda, and they need to be able to be putting it forward much more aggressively.
Now, Senator, that would be breaking news if you agreed with the Democrats.
Oh no, I hope I didn't say that.
No, you didn't.
No. One of the things both of them, so they were both conservative commentators, so one of the things they both said was on the immigration issue that they both thought that we had to end up with a path to citizenship or a path to legal status for those that are currently here illegally in the United States. I was wondering as well if you had any thoughts on whether you agree that that has to be part of the solution.
Yeah, I found it interesting. One of them said that clearly. The other one, I thought his words were interpretable in both directions. I personally believe that we must respect the rule of law. And as we build an immigration program, and I agree with what both of them were saying in terms of we must have a workable guest worker program, as we move in that direction, I think that we must be very careful to assure that those who have entered the United States illegally are not given a benefit toward access to citizenship or permanent legal residence in the United States. The bottom line is that a lot of people around the world are following the rules when they seek to come to the United States, and we need to put together a workable system that allows those who will follow the law to do so and does not give a benefit or an advantage to those who were willing to break the law. That will simply incentivize even more illegal entry into the country if those who have entered the country illegally are rewarded for that.
You know, I just say as a law enforcement officer, I agree. The idea, and of course we've got ourselves between a rock and a hard place, but the idea of really rewarding those who violated the law just doesn't set well with me. And
yeah.
So thank you.
I also believe, by the way, that position is held by the vast majority, not only of Idahoans, but people across the country. It's intuitive. We are a nation of law, and we respect the rule of law in the United States, or we should. And when proposals come forward that say, well, you know, we really are just going to sweep this under the rug and incentivize and benefit those who have broken the law, it doesn't sit well with the American public.
Senator, how would you grade Sheriff Rainey?
I really appreciate his work. You know, I respect not only Sheriff Rainey and the effort that he puts forward to protect and make us safe in our communities, but I got to take this opportunity to shout out for all of our law enforcement and military personnel. We have people across this nation in law enforcement and people in other nations who are forward deployed, who are putting their lives on the line every day to make us safe. And I just have to give a great thank you to the sheriff and to all of those in law enforcement and our military who are doing that to protect our freedom and our safety.
Well, Senator, I was hoping you'd, and we all agree with that, I was hoping you'd judge him on his new career as a talk show host.
Oh, you know, sorry, I missed the cue there. I think he's doing great. You're going to have to watch out, Kevin.
I know, he's a little too comfortable behind the mic.
Yeah, he got onto this really fast.
Oh, I think you're safe, Kevin.
Senator, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for the opportunity to visit with you. Have a great day.
Thank you, Senator.
Well, you ever, you know, maybe you could come in during the mornings and then fight crime in the afternoons.
Yeah, a little dueling, like dueling pianos while
yes.
Dueling talk show hosts here.
I agree.
Yeah, this is fun.
You know, you get up early, right?
It depends on the day. what time do you start?
I start at 5.
I know.
Oh, maybe I could do from 5 to 7.
I'll catch the commuter traffic.
All right. There we have it. All right. Let's get you to traffic at 5.
Glenn Beck, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
8:56. We've got about 2.5 minutes left with Sheriff Rainey. You know, Sheriff Rainey, and I know this happened in Canyon County. We were talking about the cooperation of the counties, but this notice shooting where you have the clerk who was killed at the Jacksons, and I know your office is involved, the feds are involved, the folks in Canyon County are involved. It shows you that even in our beloved Treasure Valley that bad things can happen.
You know, probably 25 years ago, I remember I was in a class as a detective where the instructors were, I think from that time, one was from Miami and one was from Washington, D.C., and those were both high crime areas. And one of the things is just for some reason it stuck with me is said everything that happens in Miami and in Washington, D.C. happens in Boise, just not as frequently. And that's always sort of stuck with me that those violent crimes, we don't have the frequency, but they can happen here. And, you know, there's a lot of things that people don't hear about. That one is particularly disturbing. I mean, the ruthlessness of it and the disconnects of, you know, go in and commit murder for such a fundamentally simple theft of the safe, and then the safe's down the road and it never gets open, and what do they get for it? And you always wonder about motive. It's one of the interesting things in the law enforcement business is motive usually comes at the end of the investigation, but it always makes you wonder, how can one person really do something to somebody else so cold-bloodedly, so ruthlessly, so uncaringly, and I suppose as long as we're dealing with humans, it'll be the same thing. But you know, this shooting last weekend that occurred in Boise, without saying too much, here's a guy who doesn't really have any record that would make us think, oh, he was violent, and you know, they'll release the details. But he started, everybody knows, started shooting pretty randomly and then not so randomly. And we'll wonder forever what caused him to do that, because he's passed away now. The officers there just did a wonderful job of protecting that community, putting their lives in danger to make sure that everybody was safe. And then when some events happened and they had to return fire, they just did a great job. You know, the name's been released, Jason Green. Just we got the briefing yesterday. It was a textbook example. I told him that's something that we could use for training about how to protect the community.
Sheriff Rainey, we appreciate it.
Thank you for letting me be here.
Oh, yeah. Well,
always good.
Too good of a job this time, but thank you. Good morning, Dave. And once again, do appreciate y'all listening. Good day. God bless. And keep the faith.